You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 91. Today is March 16th, Thursday, and that means we're 2 weeks out from opening day. I'm Van Burnett, joined as always by Steve Gisuelli. We got a great show ahead. Talking best ball drafts, a recent favorite of mine and Steve's over the past couple years, and the industry loves them in general. It's all the glory of draft and none of the maintenance throughout the season. So we're going to talk about tips, best practices, and recap my first draft with Steve this offseason, where basically we got skin in the game with a little bit of money. So it's going to be great to talk through some names, some strategy. Pumped up for it. Steve, how's it going?
Good. As a wrestling fan, today's a big day, 316 day.
Stone Cold 316.
It's nice. We're not even recording this on the day, and I'm good podcast episode. I'm in a wrestling t-shirt, but hey, got to do what you got to do to prepare for that, right? It was a lot of fun. We did this as we record this yesterday, so like the day before that we're actually recording this. So I know we were talking about it sort of all off season to get into it and to actually get a draft under our belt that was just us, not in like an industry league or anything like that, where, you know, there is skin in the game. It is a decent buy-in, so it's always fun doing that. They're popular. I know Fantrax does them. I think even like, you know, some of the other platforms does best balls, but it's great because we always say offline, online, and I think it's just a product of people that love fantasy baseball as much as us. It's you get oversaturated with leagues, and it's hard to do even weekly leagues. It's hard to manage that much, and sort of it could be a detriment to all your other leagues if you're in too many, right? And that's the beauty about a best ball. You draft it, and then that's it. You're done. Like, as fun as it is, you know, in the grind of a season, picking up players and doing fab and going through the grind, you can only do that so much. So that's why I think it's a beautiful thing to have best balls. And, you know, we always say we want to do leagues together, but we have a lot of other commitments elsewhere. Not saying that we're too good to like do anymore, but it just honestly it's not as fun, and that's why we do this, to have fun. So to have a team, I know we did one last year. I think we had a lot of lessons learned that hopefully we can apply and do better in this year. I'll have to look up where we finished on that team last year and give ourselves a baseline for this. But yeah, it was great. I'm glad we could talk, and then we can, you know, give some strategy and general takeaways. And I think it's applicable to all leagues too, right? Because it's the draft is still important, and then that's all this is just the draft. So, and in the middle of March, that's what everyone's doing. So it's timely.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a slant to the format, which we'll get into. But yeah, we'll talk some guys. I mean, there will be some usual suspects that you've heard Steve and I, if you've tuned into the show, rave about over the past 4 or 5 months. But there's some guys that we feel play up specific to this format. So it's going to be great. But yes, housekeeping stuff. We are recording this show on Friday, March 10th. So give us a little bit of grace, guys, if we talk about anybody that, knock on wood, got injured. Hopefully that doesn't happen. But yes, I'm out in Vegas for Con Expo, the big construction trade show. Biggest one in the world, Steve. So appreciate you being flexible with me on this one.
And I know that there was another thing that lined up with you. Well, I think you were out in Arizona when first pitch was there.
Yeah.
Are there NFBC drafts going on this weekend that you're there? Is that is that possible?
I got to look that up. It's March Madness, Thursday, Friday. Oh, so my that'll God. Be an experience.
What a time. Yeah.
The Caesar's Palace, get a little sports room going. So yeah, like I said, man, I'll be looking into any over under lines on like home runs in a season. I feel like, you know, few are as dialed in as we are in terms of average Vegas goers. Most people listen to the show, you guys are as plugged in as we are. So yes, other housekeeping, as always, guys, you can follow us on Twitter at WinsAbovePod. I'm at Van_Verified, and Steve is at Stav8818. throw us a follow. We'll be tweeting early in the season as well on takeaways. It's something we want to do more this year as well. So we appreciate the support. And give us a rating and a review if you guys enjoy the podcast. Had a great battle with Bubba and the Bat Flip podcast. We almost had the upset in the baseball pods bracket, but it was cool to see the support of our listeners, and a couple of people reached out as well. So that was great. So anyway, anything to add there, Steve, before we kind of launch into it?
No, but we did finish in 7th out of 12 last year. We did an NFBC Best Ball 12. I think it's the same exact format. It's just a slightly different name. I think it's like the Best Ball Championships or something like that. That's called this year. So, yeah, we got to do better than 7th.
Well, we're ready. This team we got here, I think we're going to be making a strong push. So we'll talk about the lessons learned. I do want to hit it at the higher level on just why we love these drafts. I mean, you mentioned it, Steve, that it's focusing on the draft itself. And I think one other really cool aspect, we don't need to dwell on this topic too long, but it's because all of the weight of the league, the outcome is based on how you draft. I think it rewards extra the work you put in the off season. You know what I mean? Because there are people who might have a bad draft, but then they really scratch and claw with waiver ads and they're super diligent on the wire and they can inch up. But this is truly just, you know, are you good at picking the guys and projecting out who's going to have a great season? So there's strategy as well, but not in-season management. So just wanted to note that, like, a best ball this time of year where, you know, the guys aren't, you know, for the most part, you're not doing it in January where you might have some injuries or anything like that, but it's still truly just a draft that matters. And it's, you know, you're playing for something on the line if you're doing kind of a money league. So yeah, go out and check it out, guys. But Steve, why don't you talk a little bit more about the format? Because best ball definitely has a particular kind of structure and set of rules. So talk our listeners through what they could expect if they signed up for a best ball.
So since there is no in-season moves, right, the rosters are a lot bigger. I know there's some formats that I think it's NFBC 50s, which is also a best ball. I know you do a few of those, right, Van? Is that, yep. is that true? There's no,
yeah, but
there's no
those
management.
Have management. Yep. Yeah.
Oh, they do have management. Okay.
Oh,
excuse me.
I'm sorry. Not the 50s. I thought you were talking about satellite leagues. Yeah. So yep. No management.
Yep. Yep. So with no management, it's a larger roster. So for this particular best ball, the best ball championship, it's 46 rounds. You get 46 roster slots. CI, MI, util, 5 outfield, 2 catchers. So same sort of starting lineup as, you know, TGFBI, the main event, those sort of things. But it's just the much larger bench instead of normally, what, 7? Seven yeah. bench players, you get an extra 16 on top of that. So, you know, you sort of double the roster, and then each week the lineup optimizes, or, you know, the algorithm optimizes your lineup, and it's a points league in order to do that. It's not, you know, roto. So,
that is the biggest difference,
yeah,
between
the
NFBC 50s.
Mm-hmm.
The 50s, mm-hmm. you have to set your lineup.
Got
there's
it.
No waiver moves. This
yeah.
one,
and,
it'll
and
just plug in your best guys.
Yep. 50s isn't points, right? It's roto.
Right.
And, you know, for best ball, like, you can't really do roto with like the automatic lineup setting, right? It has to be a point system. It's kind of like the cut line, how like Rad Slam, which is going on now. I'm sure people are tweeting about that. They are tweeting about that. I'm sure you've seen tweets about that. You know, you have to have a points league in order to have that weekly optimized lineup. So that's the, what is, the main difference, between this and like your standard roto and points. There's a lot of differences. And I think that maybe we didn't focus as much on that last year. And we can get into it, but, I think it changed our approach a little bit there. You don't really care how you get the points. You just want the points, right?
Yeah.
For roto, you go for categories. Yeah,
you do. So, you know, that alone, you're not thinking about that, right? So if you start your draft with like a, you know, a Trout and an Austin Riley, and then you think to yourself, oh man, Cedric Mullins would be a good fit here to balance out some speed. forget that way of thinking when you're playing in a best ball with points. You can load up, and that kind of segues to just a summary of the points format. We don't want to like bore you, but it is notable that homers are worth 6 points and steals or a stolen base is only worth 5 points. So that's almost like flipped to me, Steve, because I feel like homers are more prevalent. But
maybe not this year, but yeah.
Yeah. But and also homers innately come with a run, an RBI, and a hit. So technically a homer is actually like an 11-point play. Or I guess maybe an at-bat is dropped because of one thing. But anyway, that's notable that speed is faded here. Beyond that, I think, you know, probably the biggest thing to call out is playing time really matters. Pitchers as well. The saves are 8 points, but you also can accrue points in a hurry with innings pitched. I think it's 3 points per innings pitched, but then you get docked for walks, hits, earned runs. So, you know, you see starters kind of scooted up a little bit compared to relievers. Or
scooted up and then just overall pitchers scooted down. Right?
Faded, yes.
Yeah.
So hitters are much more of a priority because when you look at the points column in the draft, you know, the top scoring guys are not your workhorse pitchers even. It's mainly hitters who, like an Aaron Judge, for instance, is getting 6 points per his, 60 homers. So that's just a quick summary on the scoring. But anything else to add, Steve? Because I think we want to get into overall, we're going to talk through kind of strategy tips. And then when we get into our draft, we'll talk through all of our players, you know, kind of hit on why we like them, but also stress test that against the best practices and say, you know, did we, you know, prioritize homers over steals and so on and so forth?
No, I think we hit on it. It was just interesting to see, and we can get into it as we talk about the draft. Like, there's so many different strategies and just different ways that you can approach it, even with sort of, okay, this is what I have to do, and these are the rules and how to attack it. But there's still, you know,
different ways to get there.
So many, it's just so interesting. Just looking at the draft board, like, you know, you see a team with six outfielders in the first 8 rounds, we'll get into. Like, it's not that bad of an idea because there's 5 outfield spots and. You need to have that covered at all times. And it's, other than the pitcher slot, it's the biggest spot on your roster. So, and then there's obviously util too, that an outfielder can go in there. So it was just really interesting. I think it was a very sharp room. It was a good draft, and I'm glad we did it and excited to break it down.
Well, let's alternate here, Steve, on best practices or, you know, tips. You know, if you read a article about strategies for NFBC best balls or best balls in general, we can kind of go back and forth. One thing that jumped out at me, and it's just kind of logical, when you have 46 guys on your team and it's optimizing to the best performer, one thing that jumps out at me is that volatility, which is usually something I'm terrified of in weekly leagues, that's something that actually isn't that bad of a thing here, because guys who accrue their value from going nuts, and we know the type, right? It's like you've seen, you know, John Birdie go off for 5 or 6 steals in a week. You've seen some of the mashers who hit 4 or 5 home runs in a week, and then, you know, Roddy Tellez, who, how many games did he have multi-homer? He'd have back-to-back 2-homer games, and then he wouldn't hit another homer for 4 weeks. And on one hand, that will kill you in a weekly league, but because you have that optimization, I don't run from volatility. And I think it's actually, especially later in the draft when you're in like the 40s, volatile guys are the ones that, like, you know, you might only use their stats 3 times a season, but if they go nuts, you're getting a bump on your points for that week. So I think it's not the worst thing in the world.
Yeah. I really think that's a great, great point. And it's something that, as I've gotten older and sort of more risk averse, it's a hard habit to break. And especially because I do play a good amount of weekly leagues.
Same. CJ Crone's yeah, a great example too.
Yeah, you try to shy away, like, and you try to remember, like, oh yeah, like the bulk of this guy's stats came in his extremely hot July. Like, that doesn't matter for this, because, you know, you have other guys that'll fill in when he's cold in June, but when he's hot in July, he could be carrying you and getting you all the points that you need to help win. So I think that's a great point, and I don't know if we took enough. What do you think? I guess maybe when we get into our draft, we could talk about it, but I don't know if we took a lot of those guys that
there's
have high volatility.
There's some of them, and I also don't know that you want to construct a team with, you know, dated references, but like a Mondesi and Buxton, yeah, and like up and down, because then if it all crashes at the same time, you look at what everyone else in your league is getting. But I do think, I guess the takeaway here is when you get later in the draft and some of those names are floating out there, like that's when I think it makes sense to take a shot, because if they're just bang average every week and you're getting them in the 38th round, they're probably not going to crack the lineup
A great point. That's a great point. Yeah. And it's just, you don't have to build your team around it. You just don't have to necessarily shy away from as much as you would in a standard league.
Yeah. But we won't cheat, Steve, because I think the structure of our show, we'll go through our names and then talk about how we did it in these categories. But I think we did all right there. So that's the first one is volatility. Why don't you hit on another kind of tip or best practice?
This is like something that I tried to focus on the entire draft, and it's kind of balancing your bench and depth, not even necessarily bench, but building position depth from early on in the draft.
Yeah.
Because this is a lineup optimization, like you need to have your positions covered if, you know, inevitably when someone gets hurt, you need to have a backup at a spot for the deeper positions like outfield and pitchers. You need to have enough coverage there for, you know, when guys aren't performing or hurt. So I think we really tried to focus on building depth, and I think that's important. Something that I normally wouldn't do is like take a catcher super early, and we were the first catcher off the board, because it's so important to have all these positions filled, because you can't go to the waiver wire and, you know, if you're weak at a certain spot, okay, I'm just going to allocate a good amount of fab to build up this spot. So you really need to have balance, and you really need to have depth. I think that that's the biggest takeaway when doing these drafts, filling in your positions is more important in this draft than I think in a league that has fab or weekly moves, because you're not able to set your lineup. Like, you have what you have, and I think that therefore you need to round out your lineup, your starters, and then fill it with depth as soon as possible. For a team in our league that was taking six outfielders, which I didn't hate, because you have no worries at outfield whatsoever, and that's five of your roster spots. So I think you can kind of do that, because pitchers and saves aren't as there's not a tax on them like they would be in like TGFBI or the main event, because you can get your points anyway. It doesn't necessarily have to be a save, so you can kind of do that more freely without, you know, decimating your roster, your rotation, right? The pitchers are bumped way down, so you can kind of wait on that and fill in the depth earlier, which I think we did a good job of. So that was my biggest takeaway. Yeah.
No, that's a good note. But to jump in, I'm thinking of the Nick Pollock. He's mentioned in the past about any starting pitcher in the majors, and I'm going to butcher kind of these percentage splits, but it's like, you know, 50% of them are okay starts, 20% of them are bad starts, and 30% of them are like great starts. So, you know, based on their skill set. Mm-hmm, but, you know, if you have Zach Wheeler on a bad start 1 week, and then you got like Ryan Yarbrough, who has a great start because he's at Oakland or something, like that's easier to do than if you have a team of Mike Zuninos at catcher, and you can't play the catcher carousel on the wire. So it is important to make sure that you have a strong base, and then, you know, depth, like you mentioned, because you're stuck with these guys for the whole season.
Yeah, like there's a chance that if, you know, a position anywhere on your lineup, the best that you could do is like negative points. So
that's
a possibility anywhere. So I think it was important to fill out our roster. Whereas, you know, if you do TGFBI or a weekly move league, and it's like, ah, crap, like, you know, I waited on second base, like I can grab, you know, the 18th best second baseman because I like X, Y, and Z underlying, you know, and then worry about that there. And then I could just take another bench hitter and a high upside second baseman. Then that really doesn't work in this format, right? You need more certainty. You need more certainty at every spot in your lineup.
Certainly at the kind of for your starters, you know, it's like have your anchors and then, you know, you can play volatility and we can challenge ourselves on that one too when it comes to our staff. But a couple other quick notes on best practices, you know, right in line with that positional depth, guys who are multi-eligible, right? So like a Jake Cronenworth or, you know, guys that might seem a little vanilla, if they're first base, second base, all of a sudden they're capable at first, second, middle infield, corner infield, util. So that just makes the algorithm, you know, it's like a permutation exercise.
Yeah, it gives you more options. It gives you more options.
100 different lineup options that could score well for you. So those guys get pushed up a little bit, and you don't want to walk away from the draft without any of those guys because it does make your lineup kind of a Swiss Army knife. So that is a strength as well. And then kind of the last one that we can pair these two together is just take your oatmeal and playing time matters. And what we mean by that is for everything we just said about volatility, it's a pretty risky proposition to, I mean, give me a big prospect hitter, Steve. I'm trying to think of one that we might have looked away from.
Jordan Walker.
Andy Rodriguez, yeah. Jordan Walker, like guys who, you know, you would add them and stash them for 2 or 3 weeks in the regular season just for their debut without having that certainty that they're actually going to play. Sometimes that can be fool's gold in a league like this when you'd be much better served to grab a guy who, you know, is going to start every day and bat sixth for the Giants because one of those weeks he's going to get hot and that's going to crack your lineup. So that's kind of that playing time, that oatmeal. I mean, you mentioned it too with, would we normally love taking Real Muto in the third round? No, we wouldn't. But that's kind of that take your medicine moment, and it really does help in the long run. So those are kind of our different categories for tips is balance your bench, a boost for hitters, a boost for position eligibility, late volatility so you can try to get those hot streaks, and then playing time and oatmeal are all some factors there. So hopefully that helps as a primer, and we'll get into all the names that we took and evaluate how we did with those strategic thoughts in mind. But first, we are going to take our first ad break, and we'll be right back. Okay, so Steve, any closing thoughts before we jump into the actual names, or are you ready to get into it here?
No, let's get into it.
Well, lead us off. Talk to us about our, you know, our draft slot, our maybe our first 3 or 4 rounds and how you felt it went for us.
So we set this league filled like an hour before the draft actually started. So we were talking KDS, the Kentucky Derby style draft order, pretty close to the draft. And I know we've been talking how we want, like, you know, the sweet spot sort of the middle of the first round. But after drafting from that spot in TGFBI, and I know this was a little different because it was a live draft, 55-second pick timer. It wasn't a slow draft like we've normally been doing for these other drafts. But I liked building our team, or I like building teams at the turns, just 2 picks at a time.
Yeah.
So I think we did 1-2 and then 12-11 so that we could build our team there and then sort of went from outside in.
Extra important too for the importance of positions, like we were just saying, like that, you know, if you're in the middle of the round, you can't really say I'm going to get a second baseman here and an outfielder next. You know,
I think it's easier to build to focus on your positions and where you need to fill when you pick 2 at a time. So I like that for this format. And I like it more in general, you know, regardless of the pick. And like, you know, the main reason for picking in the first round is because, or picking towards the middle of the first round, because you get a good second round pick. But then after, there's so many other rounds, right? After that, it's done. Like, you don't want to take your draft slot just based on the first two rounds. I know that, you know, arguably they're the most two important, but I kind of like at the turn. So we got our second choice. We got two, which was fun. I think we told ourselves that we were going to take whoever was left between Ohtani and Judge. Ohtani went one, as he does in most of these best ball points league, just because it's like, you know, it's position eligibility on steroids. It's you're either going to get him as this amazing pitcher this week, or, you know, he's going to go off as a hitter and slot into your
no detail. Headaches. You just get the best Ohtani. It's how it should be, man.
Yeah.
Get him. We got Judge. No.
I got Ohtani in Razzlin, though, which was pretty nice. I think I had him at three, which is a similar format.
Never rostered Ohtani.
That's got to change.
Yeah.
Judge. I mean, he's a guy. I don't think I've ever had a share of Judge really either. I know that there's just some talk of, you know, you don't want to pay for the career year, but I mean, in a points league where homers are just so valuable, like, how could we have not gone Judge too? I think we considered Acuna, right?
Let me throw this out, Steve. So last year in this points league format, Aaron Judge led all players with 1,118 points. Can you guess what the second highest was without looking? Not the player, but the point total from 1118 to what was second place?
838.
You're literally looking at it.
No, I'm not. But I looked at it.
Go buy a lotto ticket, dude. It's 8:38 on the dot. Are you screwing with me right now?
No, but I saw it. It's just this. I remember God it, almighty. And it was Goldie, right?
It was Goldie. Yeah. So yeah, spoiler alert.
I swear I'm not looking. I was not looking at that. I did look at it obviously when we were drafting, but yeah.
That goes to show, like, Judge does not need to be who he was last year to be completely elite in this format, especially with the emphasis on homers. So yeah, continue. Sorry.
There's been so much, and he does so much else well too, right? Like, even if he's not this a 300 hitter, even if it's more like the 280, you're gonna take that. And I'm not banking on Judge hit 60 home runs again, but I think the floor is like 45, you know, right? 40.
As long as he stays healthy, for sure.
As long as he stays healthy, and he has now for the last 2 years, and you know, the whole no one's really injury prone anyway. I sort of am in that camp as well. At least you can't predict who's injured too well, or who will get injured. But I just don't see how we could pass up on a guy who produced that many points. Like, even if it's 85% of that, it's still probably the best player in this format, right?
Yeah.
Even 75% you're taking, and you're not disappointed with spending the second round pick on it, or the second overall pick on it. So, and outfield too is important, because there's five to fill, and, you know, we got arguably the best one in this format, at least. I would have considered Acuna too. But I just think that because it doesn't really matter, like, the steals don't matter as much, and homers are more valuable, that I would give Judge a bump over Acuna, where I would probably go the other way around if it wasn't a points league. But it's nice having Judge on a points league roster. Yeah.
Okay. So then we went with the second highest points leader from last year.
I didn't realize that. That's nice. We have 1-2 from last year.
So, at the end of the second round, we got Goldie, which, again, kind of attacking positions, knowing that it's five outfielder. We got Judge, then we got Goldschmidt at first. And then on the swing back is where we went Realmuto. And we talked about that earlier in the show, so we'll keep rolling. What gets a little interesting for us, Steve, is here we are in round four. We don't have a pitcher. And we went ahead and rolled the dice with the Jacob DeGrom. Now, I know what you're saying, that our best practice was take your oatmeal especially at the top of the roster spots. But I do think for the starting pitcher, there might be a little bit more forgiveness in that, you know, yes, DeGrom might not be there all the time, but as long as we can have one of our 12 pitchers, really we have, what, 18 pitchers? As long as we have one of those guys that, you know, performs well to kind of backfill for DeGrom, and then the weeks when DeGrom is on fire, we're just going to cherry pick those best weeks. So, you know, God willing, he stays healthy, but this was a little bit of a gamble compared to our first three rounds for sure.
And there is an overall aspect, which I think is always fun to take a risk on a guy like DeGrom.
Good point.
You know, if you get the full year, which at this point is a long shot, but if you do, your chances at getting not only your league prize, but an overall prize goes up exponentially.
Yeah, those are big numbers too. When you get in the overall, the payout's a real deal. So yeah, we got DeGrom as a little bit of a lotto ticket there. And from that point, we went back in on hitters for back-to-back picks. We got Alex Bregman. So again, focus on position, short up third base there. And then we needed a shortstop and went Dansby Swanson, who I think he's kind of an oatmeal one as well because he's usually durable. He's going to rack up some stats. So yeah, shortstop is deep, but we got Dansby there with our six-round pick. Then we went back in on pitching. So, Steve, why don't you kind of VO where we were at with this back-to-back pitcher move that we did here?
Real quick on Swanson, you know, I don't love him. I think it was a career year last year, so even more so than Judge, he's just not as good as a player. Like, you don't want to buy someone coming off that career year. It's a new contract on a new team. We've talked extensively about how sometimes that leads to some slumps in the beginning of the season. That being said, and yeah, shortstop is deep, like, but you need a shortstop from this tier sort of thing. Wander Franco went the pick before. Like, even though it's deep because it's best ball and you need to have that depth, like, that's sort of the thing that I would change my mind on, where if I didn't have a shortstop at this time in a weekly league where there was moves, I probably wouldn't. I would say, okay, I'm cool with waiting and taking, you know, a flyer on a shortstop and having, like, Ezekiel Tovar as a starting shortstop or something like that. In this format, no, because you need that depth at that position. But
yeah, but Swanson has missed, I think, all of two games in the past three seasons. So, there, so there's durability.
Even if it's just that, right? That's useful.
Plus, he just feels like a guy. You know, he feels like he belongs in Wrigleyville. I think he's gonna.
I like it. I like it.
Yeah, the fans are going to lean in there. You know, maybe it's the Cardinal in me, but I know he's going to be good for them as well. So anyway, we got Swanson. Talk about our pitchers as well.
Gausman and Green, the two Gs, to back up DeGrom. So another – I think when we took him, you're like, yeah, Gausman could be like a top 5-10 pitcher, which I think he can. Like, he has been in the not-too-recent past. I know last year – wasn't peak Gausman, but there was a lot of like bad luck that went into the quote unquote down year for him. Like, he was still really, really good, and I considered maybe a low end SP1.
Dude, I was gonna hit on him in our episode last week, but just like to quickly recap, like on pitcher lists, PLV hit luck, 34 hits were straight up unlucky for Gausman. So that's where that, like, he had 174 innings, 205 strikeouts, so the K's were elite, 3.35 ERA you'll take, but the 1.24 WHIP is what you were like, what? 1.24 WHIP when he had a 4% walk rate, but his BABIP was 3.63 last year, and his career BABIP is 2.90. Like, I just think Gausman is, you know, he could be like a top five guy this year with his swing and miss stuff. I was pumped because I didn't have a share yet. I got sniped by Pete Ball in TGFBI. So, yeah, I was really happy that we got him here, Steve.
Yeah, you said everything I needed to hear. I love it. I think that there's some, you know, there's an overcorrection with Gausman, even though he's still considered, you know, a a top pitcher. He's not being drafted like he was last year. Maybe people felt like they got burned because of that WHIP number. And just in general, I think that's a good time to buy in, especially with a guy with those skills.
But then you were on the other side of it with Hunter Green. We were kind of like echoing each other here. So talk about the Hunter Green call here.
Yeah, I feel like we said we didn't have any shares, right? We've been hyping them up. You know, not that we are the only ones. It's like the pitcher with the most hype there is this offseason. But to get a guy that has the potential to get as many strikeouts as Hunter Green, like that could just be massive, massive points every week. And to have him as our third starting pitcher, I think built a good foundation for us. You know, three in the first eight rounds, I don't think is too much. You know, we said we wanted to build on hitters, and I still think we were able to do that. We kind of got a lot of our scarce positions covered at first and third that allowed us to do that. So, yeah, I think that Green is a perfect balance of upside, especially when we paired it with more of a steady Eddie guy like Gausman. So, yeah, we need some things to go right with the Grom and Green. But I'm pretty confident that Green will be what he was in the second half, and then you just have to bank on DeGrom's health. So, yeah, I could see Green just, you know, averaging 8 to 10 strikeouts a start and just racking up points like crazy.
Yeah, like the trend that we're kind of showing early on is that, like, Our stable foundation was on the bats, but then on pitching, because we knew, you know, there again, all it takes is 1-2-start week or, you know, a light matchup and you might have a, you know, whoever it is, Kyle Moeller or something, jump into your lineup. So we were going for some of the boom bust top end pitchers to where, like, if we were to make any noise in the overall, it would be because our pitchers that were, you know, lotto tickets hit the jackpot. So yeah, I think, and then Gausman was a nice little stability to mix in there. So yeah, I think those were both good plays that I'm super happy about. So advancing here, as we're now kind of getting into round nine, you're passing like pick 100 range. This is usually the section where you're kind of filling the gaps. So at this point we were, you know, we only had one outfielder, with Judge being our first outfielder. So we went in on Christian Yelich, who you were pushing on, Steve. And part of my concern was just, you know, with Yelich, I talked last episode about how I'm kind of fading Brewers hitting just a little bit. But when you do look at Yelich's line, it was pretty solid for, you know, viewing that as like a down year. It's funny, I remember at the start of last season, we were saying, it's going to be one or the other for Yelich. He's either going to be an MVP candidate or we're going to be picking him at pick 300 next year. Mm-hmm. And it was not that case at all. He was like right in the middle. And maybe that's who he is at this point, with room for more. But, you know, I think it was a solid pick. And I think he's a little underrated in terms of across the board stats. But why were you pushing so hard for Yelich?
Yeah, I think it's just a particular. Another guy that I think is victim of what you said, that those MVP expectations, like if this is who Christian Yelich is now, like it's still a pretty good fantasy player. Like I would expect, you know, probably a little bit better average because of the shift. You know, he's had issues again recently with ground balls. And if one thing is going to go up, it's batting average on ground balls, and Yelich still hits the ball hard. So I think there's some room for batting average improvement, and we could see sort of that Miami Marlins pre-true breakout with maybe a little bit more power, you know, with 20 homer power, which is really, really good. And I know you're talking about how, you know, he does walk a lot, and that could take away some of his
hits and everything.
His value there, yeah. But I believe, you know, you lose a point for an at-bat, right? And walks aren't at-bats. Let me make sure it's not plate appearances in the rules, but I'm pretty sure that that's the case.
Yeah, it's at-bats. It's at-bats.
So, yeah, so a walk isn't a negative one, which is not nothing. for Yelich, and for a guy that steals as much as he does, hits as much homers as he does, I think that there is some room for upside with Yelich. And yeah, we really need an outfielder. I know we were considering Kwan, who actually went with the next pick, but I just can't see Kwan with you know, a max 10 home runs from Steven Kwan. That would be a lot for him. I know he gets a lot of hits, but you know, only 15 more homers from Yelich should make up for that, considering he does steal just as much as Kwan does, if not more.
Yeah, and yeah, I know in the off season a lot of people talk about, you know, everybody's got a success story and everything, but that Yelich interview where he was talking about Jesse Winker, when they were asking him about his offseason, he kind of stepped away from trying to fix himself so much and just enjoyed like some personal time. And there's some articles about how he's in, you know, the best headspace that he's been in years coming into this offseason. So I know it's super soft narrative analysis, but, you know, sometimes that stuff, you know, these are human beings. So maybe there will be kind of a return to a happy medium between breakout Yelich and Marlins Yelich, like you're talking about.
But, yeah, yeah, I hope so too. I feel like Yelich is the kind of guy that can do that, just with how he approaches the game and what he did to unlock and become an MVP player, right? Like, it was just an amazing story. And, you know, I'll always root for Christian Yelich, and I'm glad that we have a share, personally.
Sure. Yeah, agree. And great call on the shift. That'll be nice to see if his 252 average from last year can, you know, maybe get up to 260. And then we're talking about like a, you know, 2020 guy with a 260 average. So mm-hmm. I like it. Moving through our next picks, you know, we got Nico Hoerner. We've talked about him a lot on the podcast. Leans a little bit more steals heavy, but we didn't have a second baseman. I know we still like that he is kind of a true 280 hitter with room for more and possibly 10, 20, maybe as many as 25 steals. So that should add up with him hitting leadoff for the Cubs to where, you know, we like that production because we needed a second base. And then beyond Hoerner, we went Blake Snell as our SP4 there. So another guy that's kind of feast or famine, but you probably don't need to deal with the headaches when Snell does have mm-hmm, his one or two mm-hmm. blow-up starts, but you are getting that, you know, he's going to have a hot streak where he looks like one of the best pitchers in the league, like he did for the entire second half of last season. So Snell, DeGrom, Hunter Green, like we have some absolute stat rats when they're on, you know.
It's a good format for cherry bombs because you don't worry about the bombs, right?
Yes. Yep. Well said. Yeah. So Snell, we got there. We've talked about him plenty as well in the offseason, but we went in after that for Joey Meneses, which you might hear that and be like, whoa, that seems early right after a Blake Snell. But remember, pitchers get pushed down, and Meneses has the dual eligibility with first base and outfield. So this is the first one, I think, Steve, where we can, you know, say that's a corner, that's an outfield, mm-hmm. wherever he plugs in.
Having those, you know, having first base outfield is so much better, like, is so much better than second base shortstop, which is a lot more common, obviously, yeah. Just because it's second, short, and corner. For this, it's second, short, first CI, NOF. And then another guy that we're going to talk about a little bit has, you know, the CI, MI, OF, which is great.
Total cheat code.
So, yeah, they're like cheat codes in this game. Like, we were talking as we were drafting. It's like, oh, you know, we don't have a backup CI. We're corner infield. It's like, oh yeah, Meneses is there. It's like, oh yeah, nice. Like it's relieving when you realize that you have these guys
big time.
You know, because the draft software and room like slots a guy in for these best balls out of certain positions. So you kind of see like an 0-for-1 at CI. It's like, no, you're good there.
We got
like, we're covered, which is nice to do. And you know, there's a lot to like about Meneses too. I think we talked about him last week. A lot under the hood backed up, you know, what was, if you know, you might write off as this close to 30-year-old guy coming up for the first time and having a hot stretch. There was a lot more under the hood that showed that Joey Meneses was real, as opposed to some other guys that come up late and might just be a flash in the pan. So I like Meneses a lot.
Yeah, and good reports from the Nationals. They got him set to hit cleanup. And that's where last episode we were talking about how Meneses might potentially leapfrog a guy like Lars Nootbaar because of that volume and that that steady in the lineup 5-6 times a week. And this is a prime example in this format where Meneses' ADP was about 25 picks ahead of Nootbaar. So it's exactly what we were talking about. But yeah, Meneses should be a nice dash of upside to go off. But at the minimum, I think like a 20 to 25 homer guy, respectable average, and some good volume stats, bat and cleanup in any roster. So that's Meneses. We'll get into our next picks, which is really where the fun starts. And we'll catch up after our second ad break. We'll be right back. Okay, so Steve, you know, first we took our medicine again with our second catcher, with Danny Jansen. And, you know, anything to add here? I think we know what we're getting with Jansen, but it's very nice to look up and see Real Muto and Jansen as our catcher one, catcher two.
Just wanted guys with that are just good, that'll have playing time. Like, obviously, Real Muto is the first catcher off the board. Jansen, you know, maybe if we did this again, I would have we could have bumped up and grabbed like a William Contreras or Sean Murphy, but those guys went in round 7 or 8, and they were the catcher one for a lot of these guys. So to wait 6-7 rounds and then grab a guy like Jansen that, you know, may have some playing concerns because Alejandro Kirk is there, but he still got a good amount of at bats. Last year, it's just it's nice to have guys that you to not worry about, even in leagues that are weekly with two catchers. I think I'm going to start bumping up catchers more just because it's such a pain trying to have to fill it with guys who are just awful hitters and shouldn't be on any fantasy rosters.
We're getting too old for it, man. We're getting too old for the catcher carousel.
So it was just it's good to have, and I think it's important to build those shallow positions, or else you're going to be looking at some tough options as guys that are going to be in your lineup every week. So, glad we went with Jansen where we did.
And then next, we go with, forget everything we've ever said in the past two shows about Lars Nootbaar, because we are in with another share, Steve. And, you know, I think at this stage, you know, you're near like pick 200 in that ballpark. That's where I feel like we kind of hit a pivot a little bit, because a lot of the steady Eddies are kind of off the board for offense. So then you're just looking for, you know, upside and playing time. And I think Nootbaar should be good for his 4 out of 5 games. And we all know with Nootbaar, there's the potential that, yeah, his projections might say 17 homers, 5 steals, but nobody would be shocked if he went out and hit like 25 to 30 homers with a much better batting average than like the 230 he was at last year, because he completely turned it around in the second half of the season. So I think we're pretty stoked that we got Newt. And unless you got anything to add there, Steve, you can hit on the next guy.
No, it's just interesting because normally at this point in the draft, I know we always talk about how, like, you know, once you get to pick 200, you know, you shouldn't be worried about taking some risk because you can just cut a guy at this point and really not have any regrets. Well, not in this format. Like, we're stuck with Lars Nootbaar for good or for worse, which for better or for worse. So I think it's fine to mix it in, and I think it's nice that we mixed in an oatmeal-y Meneses with a Nootbaar
and Yelich before that,
right? Especially for outfield, that we have to fill 5 spots on a daily basis. So it's just interesting to keep in mind, like, yeah, this is the point where you could take a risk, but no, you can't cut these guys if they're total flops, so you need to balance that. And I think we did a decent job with that, but it's just an interesting takeaway.
I think he'll be – his defense is great, too. I think he'll be
fine. I'm not saying that he is
this
extremely risky player, but, like, you know, it's just more of an overall takeaway.
Yeah, for sure. Well, then we went Charlie Morton, Steve. You've been convincing me all offseason on Morton, and this comes in as our SP5. So at this point, we have DeGrom, we have Gausman, we have Hunter Green, we have Blake Snell, and then Morton kind of feels like a nice little, you know, as safe as an older pitcher like Morton can be. Seems like a little bit of a floor pick here. What did you think?
Which is perfect for what I think we did and why it's kind of okay to take these risks. Like Morton in the 15th round, like that's, you know, that's not going to be the case in other leagues. Like all these pitchers are just bumped down. And I think it's a good way to balance some of the risks that we took. Another guy that should rack up a lot of strikeouts and a lot of points. So, I think it fits well, and I like what we did with our pitching coming up to sort of backfill and fill in the staff and get a lot of innings covered for if and when some of these guys don't perform or go down.
Yep. And then after Morton, we look up, we see that we got two Cardinals, we got two Cubs. We had to tilt the scales, and we go Brendan Donovan, who is quickly, Steve, becoming a WAF.
The storyline of spring, yeah, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Hit his fourth home run as we record this. Between now and next week when you guys are listening to this, maybe go out and check what Donovan has done since then, because his ADP is surging, and in this format, it already is, you know, baked in because his eligibility is through the roof. I mean, I don't know if you got it in front of you, Steve, but I think it's third outfield? He's got some ridiculous eligibility going on.
It's at least second, third outfield. So
outfield. So, you got middle infield, you got corner infield, you got outfield. It's pretty much everything you can get but pitcher or catcher. So, and short. So that's Brendan Donovan. If you guys missed it, he's done the batting stance change. He's added muscle
swing
in the offseason.
Yep.
And he's got about as many home runs in spring training as he had all last season for the Cardinals. So, Donovan, wow. I hope it's not fake news, because if it's legit, this is a steal, especially in a best ball in round 16. So, was very pumped about that one.
Yeah, I think we when we took him, I was like, oh, it's just like a 10 pick bump on his ADP from where he's going. It's like, yeah, this is probably going to be where his ADP is as we speak now, and then as spring continues, just because he's tearing the cover off the ball, there's some, you know, actionable changes that took place in tweaking his swing. It wasn't Driveline that he went to, but he went to like another facility similar to Driveline, like Lars Nootbaar did, and added bat speed and changed his stance, all that good stuff. Everything you want to see to back up these results, which is exciting.
We're talking about it, Steve, and I think what we mentioned is, you know, peak Brandon Crawford, even visually with the flow, you know, and that infielder just kind of you know, stocky and a little bit of power speed combo with some average floor. So, yeah, love Donovan there. Then, you know, there's 46 rounds, so we can't talk about every player in depth, but looking at some later picks, Steve, maybe I'll cluster two sets of three here, and then we can take our pick from the deep, deep ones. But, you know, the next ones, we got Jesse Winker, who we talked about last episode. Full disclosure, I think that one on our 55-second clock was an auto-pick, but it was about 30 picks before ADP. I think it's still fine for Winker, because with a guy who traditionally has volatile splits, this is another guy who's like the poster boy for, you know, one week where you're texting all your fantasy guys and you're like, what is going on with Jesse Winker? Six homers this week. That's going to be gold as like a deep outfielder option in a best ball. So you got Winker, we went Hunter Brown, who again has that kind of boom-bust factor for pitching, but with the Astros, hopefully some wins. I always pronounce Duran's first name wrong. Is it Johan?
Johan Duran, yeah.
Johan Duran. So Duran was kind of our first closer, which it's probably a good time to note that while closers overall don't score as many points, saves being eight is kind of attractive, especially for a guy who can rack up strikeouts, because if there's a week where he gets a couple saves, that's pretty much the equivalent of like a complete game like
yeah, win, it's pretty you know? It's pretty easy for closers to break into your lineup. While you don't need them, it's good to have them, right?
Insurance, yeah. Yeah. So any one of those three, go ahead if you want to dive in.
I sort of like what we did with closers. We just took high end guys that should get saves. We took Duran, we took Evan Phillips, we took Alec Lang, guys that have skills that maybe are depressed because they don't have the full roles yet, but you know, all it's going to take is one or two saves a week for these guys with how many strikeouts they get to provide value and to break into a lineup on any given week. So I like that strategy for best ball for what we did. Even though we didn't spend any draft capital on an early closer, we still got some really skilled guys that should be able to crack the lineup each week.
For sure. Yeah, I think they're like, you know, maybe 15 save guys, give or take. And as long as they don't all happen the same week, you're in good shape, and they could be more.
Or because they could run with their roles. They're definitely the most skilled guys in their bullpen. And just on Winker, I know we got auto-picked, but we needed an outfielder. He was our fifth outfielder.
Fifth if you count Manessas,
fifth outfielder if you count Manessas. So
and then he got Donovan as well, so you know that's how it works.
Nice. But the outfielders, the straight outfielders who went after Winker were Jorge Soler, Austin Meadows, Brian De La Cruz, Charlie Blackman, Jared Kelnick, Lourdes Gurriel. I'm good with that. I'm good with Winker over those guys.
For sure. Yeah, and the next kind of three-pack, we went Sean Manaea, Evan Phillips, as you mentioned, and then I don't know that he was our next pick. I think he was much later, but I did want to call out Matt Carpenter because this is another guy that when he was playing last year, he there was a month where he was ranked number one overall in fantasy, and it's like that wouldn't be ludicrous if it happened for the Padres for Carpenter. And while he's util in most formats, Roster Resource has him at right field, so he might pick up outfield eligibility as well, which is another plus.
They have Cruz there, so he just needs 10 games at the same position, right, to get in-season eligibility. So could be done, especially if he goes on another run. I know that there was a swing change in the minors last year. He was absolutely tearing the cover off the ball with the Rangers and then signed with the Yankees and then did what he did before getting hurt. So had he not gotten hurt, maybe we're talking about Carpenter as a much earlier pick than round 38 where we got him.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's kind of in that, Jock Peterson territory as well, where, even if they platoon him, you know he's going to go off for, you know, a few weeks and crack the lineup, which is good. Yeah. Man, so opening up, I mean, we've talked about this stuff throughout position eligibility. We ended up getting Nico Horner, Manessas, Donovan. We just talked about Carp. We got John Birdie, who is another guy who can just, you know, cash in on a four-steal week. Birdie is second base, third base eligible. It's kind of a sneaky play. You know, maybe one thing we didn't talk about as much is really deep once you get into round 30 and beyond, looking at guys who do have a role carved out for that volume and some really kind of oatmeal names, even though some of these have some options. But Mike Yastrzemski we grabbed, who should play every day for the Giants. Jose Siri, not quite as oatmeal-y because there's some power speed upside there, but he's set to play outfield hopefully every day for the Rays. I know they shake things up. And then you were cracking up when I threw out Carlos Santana in the 34th round, but he's batting cleanup for the Pirates. Yeah. He's going to get volume, man. Yeah. This is a fun exercise to basically go with the boring production guys that typically you'd be like, oh, I don't want that guy, you know?
I just kept saying to you and saying to myself, and you're saying to me, at this point, we just didn't want zeros. We want guys with jobs, guys that can contribute, guys that can fill in when we need them to at the lineup in any given week. So I think we focused on role more so than upside. Did a good balance of that.
Talk through some of our upside picks, because we did sprinkle them in, and there's some good ones.
Guys like Akil Baddoo, Eli Harris Montero, who you brought up. I think he had one strikeout in 23 spring plate appearances so far. that was the issue last year. He flashed some good power in Colorado, could be the starting third baseman for them. So that's nice. I think it's a kind of the ideal blend of playing time and upside.
But like another, a Brett Beatty maybe is a big upside.
Maybe
one.
More – that's more just straight upside there.
Yeah.
But, you know, he played for a bit last year and could be a guy that just comes in and tears the cover off the ball and runs with the roll. But then the next pick is like the most oatmeal-y balance with that with Carlos Santana. Nolan Jones, I think that's another just Colorado flyer as a hitter. Ryan Nelson, a starter in Arizona. You know, Saras has talked about him a bunch. He had a good short stint last year when he came up to Arizona. Ronaldo Lopez, a dark horse for saves and the Chicago White Sox bullpen, even though the Pitcherless Discord has swear everyone to stop talking about him, to keep him as a sleeper, which is pretty funny. So there's some good upside there. And then the last guy I just wanted to mention was Ryan Noda. He has been like a career minor leaguer, had an amazing year last year, I think with the Dodgers, and then the A's took him in the Rule 5 draft, so he has to play or be returned or be on the 25-23
man. Options.
As a Rule 5 pick, he has to be on the active roster.
Noda with 25 homers and in 135 games at AAA last year, 20 steals. So yeah, hopefully it's not a quad A type of guy, but yeah, that's not a bad play. Is he slated in the Athletics
lineup? That's one thing. I mean, he has to be because a starter.
A starter at the moment, but maybe platooning with like JJ Blade or. He's first in outfield. Ester Ruiz, if he bottoms out, Laureano should have a position. But I think Blade is probably where it's like, may the best man win. And then, who knows if they pick up an injury or something. But that's, 25-20 at AAA is nothing to sneeze at. I mean, hopefully he gets a shot and can run with it. But yeah, that's an upside play. And I think it's okay to sprinkle those in when you have stability and playing time around it. So
they have Aguilar starting at DH, so that's a natural platoon. Aguilar's a righty, Noda's a lefty, so maybe there. Seth Brown though is at first. And who knows how long Ramon Laureano and Seth Brown will be Oakland A's and create a job there.
Yep. Maybe the last two like upside plays again, because we kind of cushioned around it with like a Mike Yastrzemski, a Jose Siri. We did go Nolan Gorman and Andrew Painter on a turn, which was, a lot of sizzle there, but also, guys that could explode and there's an overall element. So, yeah, I mean, I guess at this stage, Steve, we've talked through all the picks, the strategy, we've kind of been peppering in. What big picture takeaways from this draft? I mean, I feel like we both felt really good about it, but are there any closing thoughts on kind of best ball and how our team shaped out?
I think it's super important to, and I think a focus of mine was to not take those upside plays too early. Like, I don't want to take, an O'Neill Cruz in this format, just because you don't know if this is going to be the year that he figures it all out. You can't have a guy that is a zero for however many months he was when he first came up. Right. Mm-hmm. Not saying that he's going to be, but that's just the sort of risk that I don't want to take.
Most of our early risk was all concentrated on pitchers, so
yeah, so take your risk on pitchers because you could fill in those pitchers easily, and I think we did a good job of that. But for a shortstop, like, you're not filling that in with a great player if you take O'Neill Cruz and he isn't great. And I'm not saying that I think he's going to be better, but I think Dansby Swanson is a lot safer, and you need to be safe with your hitters, especially in this format. So that's my biggest takeaway. I think it was we did it well, and we really focused on playing time and building that depth and making sure that we are going to have the least amount of zeros in our lineup spots at any given week. That, I think, is the goal and how, like, my mindset, what I keep telling myself in the draft, is just make sure that you're not going to be taking zeros at any roster spot at any time. I know that's impossible, and, you know, you can't do it, but you need to minimize that.
Yeah, I mean, that's well said. It's like what we lacked in kind of early pitching, mm-hmm. I think we kind of invested in, you know, catchers, for instance, with Real Muto, Danny Jansen, like that's going to be a big relief. And then, yeah, I mean, what I'll be watching throughout the season is, you know, how did our late round picks work out? Like, was it Yastrzemski getting in our lineup way more often than, you know, a Nolan Gorman, for instance, because those are two kind of side by side where it's like a lot of upside versus kind of the floor with Yastrzemski. So, yeah, I thought it was a blast. And again, if you guys listening, if you have not gotten into a best ball, like give it a try. It really is a fun way to do another draft. It doesn't compete with, you know, your attention span, you know, on weekends when you're processing fab, or if you got a home league that, you know, takes a lot of your time. This is a great way to, you know, get out there, do a draft. You can split the entry fee like me and Steve did. It really is a lot of fun, and it's a great way to get into that practice of a quick live draft where you got to make some decisions about backfilling a position, or you get sniped and you got to react quick. So a lot of fun, and glad we did it, Steve. I got a good feeling on this one, you know?
Yeah, it felt good. It was a lot of fun doing this. It's great. We love drafting. And now we have something to just look at when we do fab each week, you know? It's nice just to have a league that we can just look at the standings and it does everything automatically for us.
Grab the popcorn. Yep.
Exactly.
All right. Well, that rounds us out. In 2 weeks, we'll be putting it all into action on opening day, Steve. Listeners, thank you guys as always for tuning in. Again, we're every Thursday from here through the season, which we're excited about. And before long, Steve, we're going to have to start actually planning what the milestone is for episode 100. So it's going to be a lot of fun. And for everybody tuning in, thanks for talking baseball with us, guys.
Thanks for listening. Later.